Welcome back to Grant and Danny. It's noon, you're listening to The Fan, and the Beltway Blitz will start in just a minute. Former Georgetown Hoyas guard Mack McClung has made his decision. It's official. He's transferring with a commitment now to Texas Tech. He says a number of events made him feel like he had no choice but to transfer from Georgetown. He was their leading scorer a year ago. Quote, "I'm looking for a place I can call home, a place I can be part of a family," end quote. So the hits keep on coming for the Hoyas. I will say, Patrick Ewing was in the hospital with the coronavirus over the weekend, and I read that he is out and he's home and hopefully recovering and doing better, which is awful, and feel bad for him and anyone dealing, obviously, with COVID-19. So thoughts and prayers to Patrick Ewing. But on the hardwood at Georgetown, more bad news for him and his staff as Mack McClung is headed to Texas Tech. Danny, they've had a heck of a run the last few years.
They have. They're turning themselves into a blue blood, a football school that, you know, is getting a lot of basketball press here. Get themselves to a national final. I mean, they're like Florida State all of a sudden. That's, you know, almost better known for basketball. But how about that 2018 Georgetown recruiting class, huh? James Akinjo, yeah. Josh LeBlanc, Mack McClung, gone. Wow.
Sounds like the cars coming by at the race. Vroom, vroom, vroom. Yeah, they are all gone.
Zip.
One other note before we get to the Blitz. The National Women's Soccer League, NWSL, so I think locally we've got the team here in D.C., obviously. They're trying to kick off their season June 27th. So this would be interesting to see if they could pull this off. Here's their plan. They want to have their 9 teams get together in Utah for a 25-game tournament in 30 days. So this is the first time I've heard of a league saying, forget our season as you know it. We're going to get together for a month. Play as many games jammed into that month as possible. Olympic-style competition with group play followed by an 8-team knockout stage. Now, they're able to get more creative and do this because there's not probably the TV deal. They don't know the rights to the different networks. And frankly, with all due respect, there are way fewer eyeballs and people who care about how they do this. They want to just take care of their diehard fans and their players. So I think this is pretty creative and a good idea. And in 1 month, every team gets to play 25 games, and they have a knockout tournament on the back end, Olympic style. I think that's a really cool idea.
It's sharp. It's a really good idea, by the way. And I think you touched on it. It's not something I'm going to watch or care about, and that shouldn't stop them from doing it. I think this is a good way to, A, to get their sort of get the product out there. B, it's a way to get folks to talk about it. And C, it's a good service to the audience that they do have. I think it's really smart, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're not doing it for you or for me who don't normally watch anyway, right? So see what you can do. Have as much of a season as possible. And if you get to play 25 games in 30 days, that's a smash hit and a win in Utah coming up at the end of June, which would be an earlier return to play than most of the leagues that we're hearing discuss returns at this point. All right, let's get to the Beltway Blitz. We'll cover a couple of the teams in town you care the most about. Let's start it off right now. Chris Russell joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Slashy, as always, a pleasure to have you on the Blitz. What did you make of Dwayne Haskins working out with Chad Ochocinco, Antonio Brown, and Stephon Diggs the other day?
Well, you can't work out at Redskins Park. I get it. I understand it's hard to get guys together. I don't love some of the pictures that I saw in terms of, you know, the anti-social distancing, but that's not my call. That's for somebody else to worry about. The bigger picture item that I would worry about here is the Redskins struck out on bringing Amari Cooper here. Dwayne Haskins very much wanted Stephon Diggs here. They're still, I think, looking for a veteran proven receiver. I can't have Antonio Brown in this culture, in this locker room, in that building. I don't care how many chances he's got. I don't care how many people want to defend him. The guy is cool for Cocoa Puffs. I want nothing to do with him. And if Dwayne Haskins is going to advocate for that, and I'm not saying he is, but if he's going to one day advocate for it, or if there's going to be some sort of pressure for the Redskins to do something like that, I am all out on that, and I would hate that move.
What'd you make of Scott Turner talking? What do you think his offense is going to look like? You know, is he like Norville Eugene, where you throw it down the field and then throw it to a fullback? I mean, give me your thoughts on how this offense might appear if and when they do play the foosball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, of course, multidimensional. But I think they and this is going to drive you guys crazy. They're going to have to, not want to, have to depend on the running game. to bail Dwayne Haskins out. They cannot ask Dwayne Haskins to be Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes even. They just can't. And if they do, they're going to lose, and it's going to look really bad. So I think they know they have to run the ball, use the short, effective passing game in terms of naturally designed screens, not just check down, naturally designed screen to McKissick, Antonio Gibson, maybe even Peyton Barber if he makes the roster, or Geist if he's able to, you know, actually play more than a couple of games in a row before being out for half the year with a whole year, that type of thing. That's how they're going to have to operate. I'd like to say they're going to incorporate the tight end a whole bunch, but unless Logan Thomas is what they think he's going to be, which I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of hype and it's a lot of hope, you know, for a guy who's got a career high 16 catches, you know, you're going to have to depend heavily again on using the run to bail out and protect your quarterback and your offensive line, oh, by the way, and then work everything off of that. And I would like to see a lot more of a short passing game, getting the ball out of Haskins' hands quickly and letting McLaurin and those guys make something happen. Because if you're asking the deep passing game and that to be the top tier priority, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
12-18, if the Caps are able to win a cup after a makeshift season, would you feel the same about it as you did a couple of years ago? And at 12:30 right here on Grant and Danny, Billy Ripken joins us to talk about the return of Major League Baseball and the owners and the players trying to get a deal done. Right now we're blitzing with Chris Russell. Do we even know how good of a coordinator Scott Turner is? I feel like he's a complete unknown still at this point.
No, I agree. I mean, a lot of it is based on lineage with North. And that's fine. That's good. He's learned, obviously, from one of the best. That's great. But we all know doing it yourself and actual making the play calls, which he's going to be doing, in addition to designing the offense by, you know, largely by himself and obviously a veteran staff around him, is a different thing. And you say, well, he got four games of a game. Yeah, but he didn't do it under Ron Rivera, number one, last year. Number two, again, he's never done it at this level, so there's going to be some bumps in the road with a virtual offseason and a young quarterback and, quite honestly, a young roster for the most part. The other thing that I would just add is you know, he's largely been a quarterback's coach, so that can be good and that can be bad. I think it can be good in that he knows how to help those quarterbacks get better at the little things, And that's fine, but what I hope, again, doesn't happen is that he is one of these guys that says, oh, yeah, I'm going to put the game in the hands of my quarterback, because I'm telling you, this quarterback's not ready for that. I'm not saying he'll never be ready. He's not ready for it right now. So I hope that Scott Turner, again, if that's his philosophy, when things get tight in the fourth quarter, takes a back seat and just says, you know what, let me do the right thing. Maybe more conservative than I would like, but the smarter, more common sense filled thing, which is move the football, which I know drives you guys crazy, move the football, but move it effectively as opposed to asking Dwayne Haskins to wear a Superman cape each and every time in the fourth quarter, because it ain't going to work.
Now, Russell, your point makes sense. I mean, I'm trying to teach my kid to ride a bike, and I'm having him do that by not riding a bike. Thank you, man. Always appreciate the time.
I knew you would come up with some sort of swarmy comment. Thanks.
It's very swarmy. Or smarmy. Either way, I love you, pal.
Whatever.
I will see you, buddy. There he goes. Thank you, Russell. Always appreciate it, dude. Tommy, let's talk some baseball, please. Our pal Byron Kirk covers the Nationals for Masson. BK, Max Scherzer had something to say, didn't he, about the proposal from the owners? What are you hearing? What are your thoughts? A lot of people are pessimistic now about the return of America's pastime.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were hoping for July 4th as the return and possibly having spring training in the next couple of weeks, part two. But with the huge strikeout from Max Scherzer last night, back to the owners saying we're not taking a second pay cut. I mean, that certainly is concerning. The argument from the owners, obviously, was that, you know, there were no fans that were going to be available. So that was part of the original plan, was that the prorated salaries would be based on the fact that the stadiums would be full. And that doesn't seem to make any sense. I don't think anybody was ever considering that there'd be 43,000 Nats fans at every game, you know, in the middle of the COVID-19. So it just doesn't make sense from the owners that they would ask for another cut here, especially from a guy like Max Scherzer, who's in the midst of a three-year span where he's going to be making $35 million per year. That could be cut down to about $5 million if it was 15%. And that just doesn't make any sense for the higher salary players, especially a guy like that. And on top of all that, it's the health concern, too, you know, is what Sean Doolittle has talked about as well. So there's a lot of things going on here, but Max Scherzer is not going to back down. And the fact that, you know, he tweets, what, 4 times in 4 years, that gives this tweet last night a lot of weight and kind of sends a big message back to the owners that the players are going to be very, very careful. It has to be on their terms if they're going to come back and play.
Byron, I know it doesn't look good, and to Danny's point, a lot of people are skeptical that a deal's going to get done, but we got history that says something will work out here. I mean, this is kind of how a negotiation goes between a league and players. The league does something that the players aren't going to accept. The players come back and say, no way. It looks like a stalemate, and eventually they inch closer together. Now, we don't have a lot of time on our side, which I guess is the issue this time, but doesn't history tell us that this is always how it begins and eventually they agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is unprecedented times, not only because of the coronavirus pandemic, but also because social media is a part of the negotiations as well. Something that wasn't a part of the negotiations maybe back in 94 or other years when baseball had to shut down. And, you know, it is very important, obviously, for the owners not to completely have an utter loss of the entire season. Going from $10 billion to $3 billion is bad, but $3 billion to zero is catastrophic. You know, you have a lot of these owners, as we've talked about, that aren't fielding competitive teams already. So you already got about 67% of the league that's trying to win and another part that's trying to rebuild. So it could be a very critical moment in baseball history if they have to shelve the entire season. But, yes, there's still a lot of bumps in the road. The salary negotiations, I think they could work that out. I think that makes a lot of sense that they'll figure it out, Grant. But also the health concerns are you know, paramount here. And something that we discussed, and you guys have discussed so many times, what happens when the first player tests positive during the middle of the season for COVID-19? Then what do you do? Is it a 2-week quarantine for everybody? Is it a 2-week quarantine for him? Do you bring up minor leaguers? I mean, there's an amazing amount of ripple effects that could happen if and when someone comes down with a positive COVID-19 diagnosis. So not only is the salary a situation, but also the health concerns of restarting the season. Yeah, absolutely. History is on our side, but also history has never seen something like this, and you know, this catastrophic in the last 50, 60, 70 years that could shut down the entire way that we see baseball. So I hope, it, just like we all do, that we can have sports come back, but this is a scary time to understand it. And, you know, the players are the ones that have to put themselves out there. And so Max Scherzer wants to make sure that they're compensated for their work, not only to play baseball, but also putting their health, you know, out there as well.
BK, in reverse order, I miss that voice, I miss that face, and I miss that heart. Good to talk to you, man. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, thanks, man. I miss you guys, too. I hope
you're our guy. Miss you, buddy.
My head against the wall. I appreciate it.
You miss that heart, Danny. Wow.
I miss his heart. I miss Byron Kerr's heart.
There was depth there that I didn't see coming. Byron, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
You too,
buddy. That is your Beltway Blitz. Speaking of baseball's return, fingers crossed, Bill Ripken of MLB Network is going to join us at 12:30 today and is at the bottom of the hour. Next, if the Caps are somehow able to win the Cup in this makeshift NHL season that might be getting underway in July, how would you feel about it comparative to a couple of years ago? Would you celebrate that Stanley Cup as if it were legit? We'll talk about that next on The Fan. After Gary Bettman made the announcement that the NHL has a plan for a format if and when it returns, still have to overcome some of the obstacles regarding the coronavirus, but 24 teams, 2 hubs, 2 cities, 12 separated into each bracket. Top 4 teams get the top 4 seeds. The Caps are one of them. Of the bottom 8 teams, they battle it out in series to move on, with 4 advancing to take on the 4 teams waiting for them in the East and the West. Danny, if the NHL does come back and play, how will people view a Caps Cup run if they're able to make one? Because, you know, at one point in time this season, they were the unquestioned best team in the NHL. They were the Vegas favorite. And presumably, based on the break that they got with the veteran roster that they have, they will have as good a chance to win as anybody. We had a very impartial, very much respected NHL mind than E.J. Raddick on from NHL Network a couple days ago. We asked him who benefits most from this break. He named a few teams. The Caps were one of them. We'll get to Billy Ripken on Major League Baseball's return, by the way, in 10 minutes. But the NHL's ahead of baseball. So for a second, let's delve into this. If the Caps were somehow able to win the Cup, do you think people would view their success the same way? Because I absolutely would. I feel like maybe I'm in the minority, but it's 24 teams. No more playoff teams than normal. You're coming back. You're playing basically a month and a half, 2 months of hockey after you already played 70-plus games to get here. I absolutely would run around and celebrate like they just won a quote-unquote normal Stanley Cup. Do you think other people would?
I think locally, I don't think you'd see maybe like the occasional contrarian in a bar after like a couple oat sodas say, it's not as big a deal, or something weird. But nationally, you might get that. But I can speak from my own experience. Those Redskins championships and strike-shortened seasons, that didn't change a single damn thing for me.
Well, we don't talk about anymore even the fact that some of those championships came in those types of years. You don't even hear about that, really.
Yeah, it's a footnote. It's anecdotally mentioned. Like, you know what's interesting about it? Two of those years with strike-shortened. No one cares. The joy's the joy, man. If you go through the gauntlet, which you still have to play games, it's not like they just stop the season or are going to crown the Capitals champion for some weird reason. Right, but you got to go play, and you win that tournament. It's a gauntlet. It matters to the occasional person who wants to put an asterisk by it. This isn't, you know, an Astros cheating scandal. This is simply, you know, a team that had to win games like anybody else. To me, there's none of that would ever enter in my imagination. If the Caps somehow won this year's Stanley Cup, you will not stop me from celebrating it just as much as we celebrate anything else that would happen in sport.
I also think there's a chance. Bigger's probably a foolish thing to say, okay? But because of sports having been gone now for months, and because if the NHL comes back and has a Stanley Cup, there's a chance that with the NBA at about the same time, it would be the first sport back, it would be the first champion crowned, you might get a reaction that we can't even anticipate of people that get in on it that wouldn't have otherwise. And the same reason now that I'm watching NASCAR races or the match with Phil and Tiger, just because. Why not? If there's no baseball, football's not back yet, there's nothing going on to capture your attention, so I normally don't watch hockey, but hockey's back and they're playing, maybe it would be massive in a way that we can't anticipate. I know just from talking to people, the expectation is that when sports come back, they could be bigger than ever before. Because normally there's just no time to miss them. They're around all the time. This is the equivalent of knowing every single day you get to eat dinner at 6 p.m. And for three or four straight days, you don't get to eat. You're going to like that next dinner that much more. And people feel like sports might be the same way. So I think you could get a huge reaction for the Capitals if they were able to win in this makeshift shortened season, this second sprint, this dash to the finish. But look, the Lightning are still good. The Flyers were white hot, are a really good hockey team.
Yeah,
you still
got to
get through the Boston Bruins. This is a rigorous, treacherous stretch. So you want to take away from the Caps if they're able to win this thing? You go ahead and do it. I won't be, because there's one team left standing when 24 are going to try to be that club when it's all said and done. It'll be the biggest postseason that's ever been played. And if the Caps can be the last team to come out of that thing alive, good for them. Let's party.
I mean, it's already, Grant, that gauntlet that you got to go through to win the Stanley Cup as it is. It's just about the toughest thing there is in sports, just to crown a champion. Normally, this is even more exceptional. Honestly, with a layoff, with the interruption, this isn't all the guys are practicing on their own. This is everyone's isolated at home. And John Carlson's been like, yeah, I haven't skated. I hope I remember how. If the Caps come back from that and win this new and improved 24-team Shebangus, to me, it's almost more impressive than a normal Stanley Cup run. Honestly, I mean, I know that may just be, you know, my homer take here, but I would say that about anybody. I'd say that about any team. If going through what teams are going through now and about to go through, if they do crown a champion, that champion to me almost deserves more credit than in a regular year when everybody's on rhythm and you just happen to be a little bit healthier or playing well when May rolled around.
Do you think about at all, at any point really, that the Redskins won two of their Super Bowls in years that weren't, I'll use air quotes here, authentic, you know, complete, in years that weren't, maybe the best word is normal. Mm-hmm. I don't ever think about that. Now, I also don't hear it brought up much. Like, I would think it's something if I was an Eagles or Giants or Cowboys fan that I would use as ammunition. Like, oh, yeah, well, no, your rings are fake. You don't hear that often. It certainly comes up some. But, like, when's the last time you thought about the fact that the Redskins won a title that way? I think as time goes on, people, it's not even that they forget, but they care less. But also, as you said, you still got to do it. It's not like they just got gifted that we stopped the season, they were in first place, and you hand them the Lombardi. Yeah, that would be fraudulent and fake. They still have the playoffs. They still have the games. They still have to be won. The really good teams are still there to be beaten, and you either do it or you don't. So to me, it would be the real deal Holyfield.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, in the 82 season, then 83 Super Bowl that the Redskins went on to win, it becomes less fluky because the following year they were excellent. They were 14-2, and they were really, really good and lost in the Super Bowl. Right, so it sort of put an end to the idea that this was just a hot 7-8-9 game run or whatever. They still whooped Dallas's ass at home. That still happened. They still beat the you-know-what out of Minnesota in the divisional round. They had no chance, and the fans are chanting for the next opponent starting in the middle of the third, the start of the fourth quarter. That team was great. You won those games. If Dallas had won that game, God forbid, but you still have to go through an opponent that's good. Right, you're acknowledging that. When it mattered, those teams won. I understand the regular season wasn't as much of a juggernaut, but it wasn't as much of a juggernaut for anybody. You know, they went 9-1 doing it their way. Or whatever the heck it was. I guess 8-1
and everyone has
season,
the same
right?
chance, in other words, too, mm-hmm. when you start back up. Everyone's on even footing. You could tweet us if you've got a thought on that, at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. Movie Club today at 12:45. We watched the new Netflix rom-com, The Lovebirds, last night. We'll discuss
yes, we
it.
Did.
And pick a new movie. Next, Bill Ripken of MLB Network on Major League Baseball, the back and forth between players and owners, and how he thinks a short season would work, how long spring training is needed before we could ramp up and actually play a game. We're Grant and Danny. On this Thursday on Grant and Danny, thanks so much for making the show part of your day during these weird times with all the options that you've got. It is a pleasure to go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline and welcome onto the show a longtime former big leaguer from 1987 to 1998 and a great analyst on MLB Network I go way back with now. Billy Ripken is with us on GND. Billy, how you getting by? How's the family holding up, man? How's everything going?
Well, I think we're doing the same as everybody else. We all have our stories on how we've been impacted, but I think in comparison to most, I think we're doing okay.
It's good to hear, man. So let's get into this. I don't think any opinion I have in sports, Billy, has changed as much over the years as owner versus player. When I was a kid, I didn't know any better. I was like, the players are greedy. This is ridiculous that they're acting this way. Now that I've grown up, I kind of have a different perspective on it. Just give me your take initially here on what's going on in terms of the players and owners trying to get themselves on the same page.
Well, one thing I think for sure is I think both sides are going to put the smart enough people in the room together to figure something out, you know, long term. We're in an unusual situation for sure. When I was playing and part of the union, I believe wholeheartedly in going through the proper channels. You have your meetings with your team rep. Your team rep is the one that's dealing with the union head, and we got things done. So hopefully the process that'll come forward, moving forward, will be a good one for baseball, because wouldn't it be great if once we get through this and they decide to come to another agreement where we could have another 10, 15, 20 years of labor peace where we don't have to talk about it anymore.
That'd be awesome. And it'd just be huge to have baseball again for fans and for this country trying to get back to some normalcy. What's your confidence that that's going to happen? I mean, it sounds like you think we will be playing ball at some point this summer.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think everybody realizes how big of a thing sports are, and certainly baseball. And I also like to put it into, you know, realistic views that I don't think sports are the cure-all and end-all when it comes to certain things, because there are certain people that are certainly reeling over what's going on. But I think in some way, shape, or form, we'll have some sort of baseball, and hopefully – like I said, the smart people get in the room, they figure out a way to do it where it's safe and we can at least have a little bit of an escape to see something on TV other than, shall we say, the Milwaukee Brewers playing the Cardinals in the World Series.
Billy Ripken with us here on Grant and Danny. All right, so Billy, in terms of getting ready, obviously there's a time crunch here to some degree. You don't want to be playing in December, November here, but that may kind of be inevitable. How long do you think guys need to get ready, players versus pitchers? What's the balance between safety and kind of the urgency, the fire under your butt to get on the field?
Well, you know, I think for position players, I think 2 weeks. And here was a guy that I could sit on the bench for 2 weeks at a time and still figure out a way to go out there and maybe contribute to day 15 when I was playing. So I think 2 weeks is probably right for position players. I also think if we do get back into playing, the pitchers are going to need more time, but I also think that the clubs and the Players Association will get together and say, okay, let's expand these rosters. We don't have to necessarily extend things, extend our pitchers out, but, you know, and they were up and running for a period of time in spring training. I would assume some of the starting pitchers out there have maintained somewhat of a pretty decent throwing program, so they're already a little bit ahead of the game, but I do think we'll have extended rosters. But for me and position players, I think you give them 8-10 games where they can get 3-4 at-bats apiece, and I think they can pick it up pretty quickly again.
Bill Ripken is with us on Grant and Danny here at 106.7 The Fan. As far as some of the tweaks that could come, you could almost use this year, I think, as a laboratory to try to experiment a little bit. I don't know if the players or if a lot of purists and fans would want that, but they've talked about at different varying points of the negotiation, the electronic strike zone to have, you know, fewer umpires close in proximity at home plate, or maybe changing the way we do extra innings. What would you think about altering a bunch of things? Maybe it's less like the major leagues than normal just during this pandemic and seeing what sticks and what doesn't.
You know, I think you're dead on with that one. I think this year, if we get back on a baseball field and there's some sort of a baseball season at the big league level, we will see this treated a little bit like a laboratory. And some of the things that we will see in a condensed season, for example, I think will take hold moving forward in baseball. I've been a big proponent of having the DH in both leagues anyway, and I think if they try that experiment, I think they will stick with it. I've heard conversations about seven-inning doubleheaders to try to get in as many games. That might be a possibility moving forward. The automated strike zone that you hit on, less umpires. All these things I think are open and probably worth a try in some sort of a season that, let's face it, we've never seen this before. So if we do get baseball rolling, I think there's going to be some people that are going to be pushing some ideas to see what it looks like. And if it doesn't work, okay, we chalk it up. It doesn't work, and it was a unique situation. But if it does work, it could change a little bit of the look of baseball for the future.
Billy, I've talked myself into and out of every argument when it comes to the following, so I don't have a good feel of this at all, and I want to get your thought. Who might a sprint benefit? I thought initially a veteran team, but like if you get one pulled hamstring, you're missing, you know, a third of the season basically, right? I thought maybe it would be teams that were deep, but then you may not need depth if you're going quick. I can't figure out who a short season might benefit. What are your thoughts on it?
You know what? I think it could be a little bit of the middle of the road teams where it does this. And Buck Showalter said, you know, nothing shows the strength of a club as much as a 162-game season, and nothing shows the weaknesses of a club like a 162-game season. So if we just threw out a random number of 80, that to me kind of puts the teams that have the capabilities of maybe running off a little bit of a streak, but then maybe could fade towards the end, where it doesn't give the teams the example or the luxury of, let's say, the Washington Nationals of last year. They were a good team, obviously. They went through and won the World Series. So I think that the really good team on paper, who knows they're really good, you know, they come out and they play 500 ball for a couple months, and then the next thing you know, they win 7 out of 10. Then they win 7 out of 10. Then they win 7 out of 10, and their record seems to jump up, you know, high. So maybe those middle-of-the-road teams, the pretty good teams, but we're not looking at them as being playoff teams, they might be the team that can actually – use a shortened season to help them.
Do you think, Billy, there's a number of games we've got to play to make this feel legit and actually feel good about giving out the commissioner's trophy? Or, you know, could we just kind of pick up with a, say, a two-month tournament of playoff baseball and everyone feel okay about that?
Well, I threw out the random number of 80, so that was probably subconsciously something where I need about a half a season for this to play in. And with the 80-game half a season, certainly a playoff format would also add into it. I would certainly not want to see us open up something towards the end of what would have been a normal regular season and say, okay, let's do a big playoff kind of version, because I don't think that does anybody any good at all. So there needs to be something of a lengthy season. I've always enjoyed the fact that baseball is kind of that sport of attrition where it's the 162 over the 6 months. So I would like to see at least a half a season. Now, on the other side, would I take a 50-game season with a playoff format? Sure, I would. I'll take anything about this time. But I think about a half a season should do us right.
Billy, awesome with us as always, buddy. Really appreciate the time, man. Hope everybody is safe, happy, and healthy. But thank you.
Thank you very much, and I hope the same for you guys.
Yeah, be well, bud. There's Bill Ripken on Grant and Danny. Great to have him back on the show here on 106.7 The Fan. Movie Club is next. Watched a brand-new Netflix rom-com last night. We'll break it down, and we'll get Danny's list of films for tonight right here on The Fan. Movie Club time on Grant and Danny. At the top of the hour at 1 o'clock, there's actually an impressive list of free agents in the NFL still available to be signed. We'll go through some of the big names. That's in about 15 minutes. But last night's movie was The Lovebirds, a 2020 romance comedy. Action, I guess, as well, although kind of cheesy action. But an hour and 26 minutes. You can't make a shorter, more tidy movie than this. I'm all in on Camille Nanjiani. I find him hysterical. I thought he was really funny in this. I didn't know the lead actress in this, Issa Rae, that well, but I thought she was also really, really funny. Do you know her from anything, Danny?
Yeah, she's on a show on HBO. I believe it's called Insecure. I believe that's the name of her program. But yeah, a comedic actress.
All right, she was great in this as well. So their banter, their dynamic, the opening scene that goes for about 10 minutes of them arguing is gold. There's a few different just zings and really, really funny lines from Camille Nanjiani and from her that are belly laugh funny. Overall, it's real cheesy. You know, it's kind of an easy watch. There's not a lot to it. There's very little depth. I mean, this is a kiddie pool in terms of the movie itself. You're kind of getting into it for 80 minutes of a couple of cheap laughs. I liked it. 1 to 10, I'm probably going to give it a 6 out of 10. I could tell you that Allison liked it a lot. I mean, she was cracking up the whole time, certainly more than I was. But I thought it was pretty good. And I'm if Camille Nanjiani makes a movie at this point, I'll watch it. I think he's on that level for me.
So it's cool to see a couple guys I did stand up with a lot in New York. Camille, obviously, is the headliner, but the witness to the initial accident, and no spoilers here, that's the premise of the movie. You see one trailer. Barry Rothbart, the guy that shows up with a beard, and he and Camille have a couple funny exchanges. Another guy I did stand up with in New York, so it's cool to see him. He was also in Wolf of Wall Street, where you might have seen that actor, Barry Rothbart. He's funny. So this is, as you said, you're not here for sophisticated twists. This is not a Christopher Nolan movie, right? This isn't The Prestige or something wild. You kind of know what you're getting into. And this couple has like superhuman zing powers, right? They're facing like ultimate adverse situations. I know I have time for some zings. Let's do a zing back and forth. I'll zing you, you zing me. We'll go very quickly. And it's amazing. You know, like Camille's got quip after quip, and Issa Rae, they play off each other very well. So this kind of movie, while it's labeled romantic comedy, I don't know. I mean, for example, the Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams vehicle, Game Night, is this kind of genre where something that's innocent and fun and there's an overarching issue with a couple that gets escalated during a heightened tension. It can be well done. It can be funny. It can be entertaining. I think this falls a little bit short of a film like that, but it's, again, it's not bad. There's nothing terribly wrong with it. It's a nice little 80-plus minute ride, as you kind of touched on. It's a 5 carbs out of 10 for me. You just kind of go like, you really? You're in this terrifying situation, and you're like doing whisper zings back and forth for like 45 seconds, 50 seconds. It's like a lot of those. You know what I mean? Where it's like action, somehow pausing the action so they can go back and forth a bunch of times, and then the action continues.
All right, that is the thoughts from Virginia and from D.C. at Danny's home. How about to our producers who are in studio at our 1015 Half Street Studios? What did you guys think of the flick last night?
I think I'm with Grant. I think I kind of had very low expectations for it and ended up kind of liking it. Like, it's not, you know, a great comedy, but would I watch it again? Yes. Do I think it would be like the perfect Saturday in the winter, no football on, and it's on TNT? I would watch it. Yes. It's on Netflix, so I can just watch it whenever I want. But it's that kind of movie. It's like Danny said. It was like game night. I would watch it again.
I like that breakdown. I think that's fair. And also, I would add one more time. If this movie was 2 hours long, it'd be a different story. It's 85 minutes with
agreed
kind of like the opening credits and whatever they have at the tail end at, you know, the last few minutes while they're scrolling things. So it's basically like 80 minutes of movie. I mean, it's hard to make a terrible 80-minute movie with stars in it that are really, really funny.
Can I also
Tommy,
offer
anything to add?
Yeah, oh, go ahead, Tommy. I was going to say, we need to talk about Anna Camp. She's just so beautiful. Like,
who's Anna Camp?
She's Edie in this film. She's blonde. She's always in. She's in all the Pitch Perfect movies and has various roles. I don't know why she's not a star. She is so pretty. Like, that woman is absolutely gorgeous in this reporter's humble opinion. Sorry, back to Tommy.
Anna Camp is absolutely wonderful. Tommy, what do you got?
Not much to add. I think Dar was pretty spot on with it. It's one of those movies where it's just going to, it's not going to blow your doors off. But if you want to just watch something that's easy, you know, like for me, I've been watching The Office a lot during coronavirus because I just want to watch something that's easy and you don't have to really dive into it. You don't have to take a Xanax like when you watch Uncut Gems. You know, it's something that you can just get through, kill some time, you know. But, you know, Danny's rating is probably more where I am. It's probably a 5. But also, I was just in the spot where it was just absolutely the lowest of expectations. Just seeing what we saw from the trailer that, you know, I was going into it. It didn't have to do much to impress me. But it's a good watch. I don't know if I'll go back and watch it again. But, it was fun to check it out.
Chris Coxon on Twitter says Issa Rae started her career with her own web series on YouTube. He linked me to it, so I'll check it out.
Oh, very cool.
He says, unlike a lot of YouTube creators, she's actually very talented. Yeah, I thought she was hilarious. I mean, she made me laugh, I would say, at least 5, 6, 7 times out loud hard during the movie at different points with just little deliveries and one-liners. And it's not like it's off the cuff. It's obviously scripted. But there's still a genius to that. And Camille did the same thing. He was great. All right, what do you got for us for tonight, Danny? What's the list looking like?
These are all, I believe I have this right, all available on Netflix or another streaming service, but mostly on Netflix. And these are all part of great trilogies because we've been watching some trilogy movies here and there. And we got started with a couple different ones. So these are all parts of great trilogies. So I'm going to have Thami go first, if that's okay.
You ready, Thami? Yeah.
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones, Last Crusade. Okay. We've watched Back to the Future 1, so I'm going to say Back to the Future 2.
Sure. Like
Back to the Future
movie.
Back to the Future 3.
No, because, you know, we've talked a lot on this show about Buford Mad Dog Tannen, so I think we can go
so
with 2.
So much Buford Mad Dog Tannen.
Also,
Tannen.
Why go out of order? If we're going to watch a Back to the Future, we should watch 2.
I tend to agree with that. Unfortunately, no one can be told what The Matrix is. The Matrix.
Sure.
Matrix 2?
No.
And Matrix 3, I'm assuming, is also a no there. Godfather Part 1.
Yes.
Godfather Part 2.
Yes.
Godfather Part 3.
No.
Okay. Return of the Jedi.
Absolutely.
Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Sure.
The Two Towers.
Sure.
And Return of the King.
Why not?
There you go. Dar, you're up.
Okay.
Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No.
Temple of Doom.
No.
All right. No Indiana Jones. Just got destroyed right there. Back to the Future Part 2.
No.
The Matrix.
Yes.
Godfather Part 1.
No.
Godfather Part 2, I'm assuming is no.
No.
Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Yes.
The Two Towers.
Yes.
Return of the King.
Yes.
Wow. Grant, this is interesting for you. I did not. Okay. The Matrix.
No.
The Return of the Jedi.
Which one is that?
That's the third Star Wars film of the originals.
So we watched the first two.
Yeah.
Yes.
So then the others are all Lord of the Rings movies. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, and Return of the King.
No.
So it looks like Return of the Jedi tonight. There you have it.
All right. That stinks. So that's unfortunate that that happened. My night is... I got a NASCAR race to watch. Might have to have a punishment tomorrow, if you know what I mean.
Uh-oh. Grant's threatening to not do his homework.
There's a possibility of no homework getting done.
I may sign Return of the Jedi and a prequel.
that would stink. Certainly would, but that would be you'd be allowed to. So it's just a matter of this. Does the NASCAR race go off or does it rain? Am I able to somehow watch it before it starts at 8 p.m.? Do I stay up late enough to watch it after at like midnight? So we'll see.
Watch it before. Just watch it before. You have plenty of time.
It's going to rain this afternoon. That's a good time for it.
If it's raining and I can't go outside, because right now I'm planning on going to get in the kiddie pool for the president. If it's raining and I can't go outside, then that might be a decent idea.
There you go.
But that could have gone better. Like, we could have had a list with fun movies that people like to watch that are
You're
entertaining.
You're right. None of those are fun movies. That's why they make three of them.
They made three of them because people are suckers.
Yes, that's why.
That's why they made three.
Why'd they make 13 Rapid and Angries? What are people for those?
Is that your way of doing like a fingers in your ears, can't hear NSYNC bit? You don't say Fast and Furious.
No, I'm just insulting. I'm insulting very pedestrian content that you love.
It's a great series. That's entertainment. That's what entertainment looks like.
That's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Star Wars, not as much.
You're right.
It hasn't been as terrible as I thought. So maybe we'll have another movie that exceeds my very low expectations.
You've already seen the first 20 minutes.
That's actually, I forgot about that. That's a great point. A lot of good players left in free agency. We'll get into the list of NFL stars that are still available. When I looked at this last night, I was surprised. There's a lot of names I'd forgotten about that I haven't signed yet. But we're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.